Jason Ross puts on. Not doing too good in that one.
You're not?
Well, I'm hanging around, but I just think even if Houston wins, somebody will have more points ahead of me.
Yeah, Chris, who you got winning?
I'm sitting at 21st right now in Jason's bracket.
What? Where am I? Yeah. I know where I'm
at 201.
I also have Houston. Alan, do you really want me to look through this entire list of people?
I think I'm 136. Just look for A Sizzle's Brizzle.
Yeah.
Is that actually what it is? Okay, well, I'm going to be here for a while, so go ahead and talk.
I know where I'm at. I'm at like 121 or something like
Chris,
that.
Chris, who do you have coming out?
Houston.
Houston. Oh, you both have Houston. Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, yeah, there's no situation like that in the other bracket that I'm in. So Chris is basically blocking me.
Just says Allen Styles. Thankfully, it just says Allen Styles. It does not say A Sizzle's Brizzle or whatever. A Sizzle's Brisket. I don't know what.
Hopefully, there's not too much gristle.
You're sitting at, what is it? You said 121. Mm-hmm. You're actually 138th.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey, you know, a lot. As long, we probably don't have the same Final Four. So they're back in action tonight. And earlier this week, somebody from ESPN, Greeny, he ends, they're talking about something else, and Greeny just ends with this random bomb that I it sounds like he's serious, and then it cuts off. Here he is.
What has been the most impressive team in the tournament so far?
UConn. It's not even a question.
Yeah.
They are a freight train. That's the way they beat you. They out-execute you. But their attention to detail and how they're coached makes them the best team in the country.
Yeah, they would make the playoffs in the NBA's Eastern Conference. That's how good they are.
That far.
Yes, they would.
You being serious or not?
Come on.
I mean, I get that he's maybe trying to be funny for a second there, but, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't even know why that would come to your head. Like, that's just not happening. I know we've asked this question about, like, Kentucky teams in the past, and at the very least, like, those Kentucky teams would have, you know, Patrick Patterson, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, and John Wall. Like, okay, it's four pros. At least it kind of makes a little bit of sense, but this is ridiculous, man. This is absolutely, not to sound too much like DeMarcus Cousins, but this is getting ridiculous, okay? What are we doing here? To say that, I know he even tried to throw in the caveat, I said Eastern Conference team. Get out of here. I mean, you're pretty much saying that Connecticut could go 500 right now in the NBA. Get out of here. That's absolutely ridiculous. There's teams out there that have, I mean, Victor Wembanyama can only lead his team to 17 wins. Okay, there's no way that anybody on Connecticut is doing anything that's moving them. You know, they're not. I'd be surprised if they got five, honestly.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
It's insane
to say, and it is a good reminder of those Kentucky years. I remember those conversations.
Pick your poison, man. You can do the AD case. What was it? AD and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist years. There's so many.
And the John Wall years as well. And it happens in the NFL when Alabama was just out of control and there's a team that just can't even win a game. It's something to do, and this is how you can tell we're getting closer to the summer once Major League Baseball is underway and it's the only thing they have, and obviously once the NBA ends, that is very much a summer thing, and well, who could you win? And it seems like it's starting to happen now.
I can't wait for us to go in depth on. Oh, would the women's champion beat the men's champion of this year? Like, it's just like why do we have to do this? These just ridiculous hyperbolic. You know what would happen if it happens every single year, and you're right, like it is a sign that maybe the content game is slowing down a little bit, because I mean it's one of those where I'm not even sure it's worth the conversation, because it's just it's so ridiculous to even throw out there. I mean, bless these college kids. I know they're staying in school longer than before. It's not like, you know, UConn has a bunch of, you know, 17, 18 year olds out there, but at the same time, like, no, these guys are not, and the jump from college to NBA is absurd. Like, there's not a bigger leap in basketball. And yeah, I mean, it's just insane.
We have an update. This is a pretty big update, as something broke last week, and we weren't sure if that meant that this person would come back sooner rather than later. After that, this person has not played, has not played, has not played, and it doesn't seem like he's going to play tomorrow. Sasha Vezenkov, we have sound coming out of the Kings media, and we will get some of that sound for you before the show ends. But long story short, Sasha Vezenkov says he is getting closer to a return, but it was a re-injury from a previous ankle injury from about a week or two before, so it takes more time, which tells me he is not playing tomorrow.
Well, I think we knew some of that information before, because if we remember, it was he had hurt one ankle and then had came back from that ankle injury, and then the very next game hurt his other ankle. So we had kind of known that it was a both ankle issue. I don't know. The thing that I still haven't figured out is has this period been because of a re-aggravation, or has it been a reconditioning that he's gone through? Because that to me tells me whether or not how close we are to his return. It doesn't sound like, from just the quotes that I'm reading and seeing here from a couple of the media people out there, it doesn't seem like he's trending towards coming back. But at the same time, I just wonder where, even now, it doesn't sound, unless we hear it in the sound, it doesn't sound like we have more clarity as to what has been going on these past couple weeks.
Yeah, and you could use him. You definitely could use him. I know he hasn't really been in the rotation, but the problem is you don't know. You know where Sasha has been at when this team is at full strength. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been playing. But missing Kevin Huerter and missing Trey Lyles, that would have been nice to just have that break in case of emergency, and maybe he hits some shots for you. But you are not going to have him. More than likely, you will not have him tomorrow, which is it's a tough one.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
They're also saying Trey Lyles has ice wrap on his knees, but he was out shooting with the team, so you know, don't really know what that says. I mean, it clearly is saying that Trey is still feeling it, especially, you know, hurting his MCL. Not great to hear that he's icing his knees up, but at the same time is at least able to go out on the floor and get some shots up. So sounds to me like he's probably where Sasha was a week ago, but you know, who knows in terms of the recovery when those guys will be back. But again, Sasha, even if he is going to come back, has a very, very tight window in which it seems like he's going to be able to play and Trey won't. And as the days continue to go on, that window gets smaller and smaller and just less and less likely that we're going to see Sasha again this season.
And then whether the Kings, let's say the Kings get into the playoffs, at that point in time, somebody like Sasha, who hasn't gotten a ton of time either way, how do you even navigate that? He gets cleared. You're in the throes of a seven-game series with the Timberwolves. Let's say they go ice cold. Would you, even if they went ice cold, and maybe it's different with Kevin Huerter out, but do you even think to put Sasha in at this point?
Sure. I would think so. I mean, if they're getting killed, like, I mean, there's no harm in putting him out there.
Not if they're getting killed. I'm saying you're looking for something. You're looking for something. Do you just ride with who you've had? Or
definitely. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. So you don't think Sasha gets in unless something's out of hand?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And yeah, even now I'm starting to trend towards, you know, he saying he's not going to get any time by the end of the season might be a bit of a stretch, because who knows, those last couple games, if they don't mean anything, he might, you know, get thrown out there. But more so in terms of, can he solidify any sort of roster spot? I just can't see that happening between now and then. Maybe if there is a blowout or something like that, he can get an opportunity to get some run in. Maybe he can show, like you're saying, maybe in a situation he could get inserted into that. But I still think he would have to have some sort of proof of concept before throwing him out there in a game as serious as a playoff or a play-in game.
My guess is that hopefully he gets in before the playoffs, before the season ends. There is a game. Maybe it's the Blazers game. Maybe it's the Blazers game.
It definitely
game.
Could be, yeah.
Maybe he's back in time for the Nets. One of those games, the Kings take care of business. And at least Mike Brown can get him in the mix and get his legs moving and things like that. That's what you're hoping for when it comes to Sasha, because if all these games are close, he's just not going to get in.
Yeah. No, and I mean, he, like, Sasha getting in there, like, do you think that would be any worse, better or worse than Duarte? Like, if anything, like, he's a bigger body, like, you know? I would think that I would be just as willing to throw Sasha out there as Mike Brown has been willing to throw Duarte out there, is what I would say.
That's how you feel.
I wouldn't hate seeing him, no. I just think, ultimately, he's a guy, kind of like you're explaining, he's a breaking case of emergency kind of guy in terms of rotational piece. I don't think he's ever going to be in the rotation for the rest of this year, but I'm not saying that there wouldn't be a situation where, hey, might make a little bit of sense to give this guy a look because he might be able to help us out here, even if it is just for a little bit.
Yeah, and getting back to Trey Lyles, who had posted something on his Instagram, he's, I guess, being reevaluated tomorrow. Sounds as if they'll be ready for him, or he'll be ready eventually, but he's happy about it, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. It is not going to happen tomorrow or the next day. It's going to take a little bit longer. So hopefully we just get good news coming out of tomorrow's reevaluation, but that's probably going to be it.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel like he's really super close, but I would expect Trey to be back probably on that road trip. You know, one of those games, maybe they wait to have him play on that second night of a back-to-back. I think that's the Boston one. Wouldn't surprise me if they hold him off for the rest of this homestand, at least, and maybe see if he's got something for the final stretch. Cause Trey Lyles is definitely a guy that they're going to need. We've seen, you know, we talked about it initially, right? Their rebounding without Trey out there is definitely taking a step back, and you really do notice the size difference when they don't have Trey to throw out there. Again, they have to throw guys like Chris Duarte at the four, and you know, your Chris Duarte or Keegan or HB has to play the four in those cases, and you know, the Kings just get really, really undersized in those cases. So they need a guy like Trey, or honestly, you know, I wouldn't be, like I said earlier, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Sasha get a couple of those minutes either.
When we return, a little bit of fair or foul, also some sound from the media availability after the Kings practice. Sal and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Gonna hear from Sasha Fezenkov, and if he will be able to play sooner rather than later. Doesn't sound like it, as we also discussed. Chris, just a quick fair or foul, man. Mm-hmm. One thing that's really annoying with the March Madness is on social media, they'll pay for the ads, right? So somebody will do something, and then the duration of how long that ad runs, okay, is can be very annoying.
Do you mean like the player specific one? Like they give the guy UVA from Oakland, they gave him
Oakland pulls off the upset with the highlight, and it's still running now.
Gotcha. Okay, I hear what you're saying. Yes, yeah.
It's very annoying to me.
Yeah, because you'll scroll and you'll be like, wait, did I miss? Yeah. Are the games on today?
Every single year.
Definitely.
It's very annoying to me. And we talked about it yesterday as well. This Ice Cube thing has really been taken off, as far as a lot of people not thinking that he's doing it in good faith, as far as offering Caitlin Clark $5 million.
What's that? Like what is the bad faith argument?
That he's claiming he's doing it for – he's claiming –
he's doing it to help her, but in actuality,
to help women's sports, uh-huh. right? When it, and people are saying Ice Cube's whole shtick uh-huh. is players that are no longer in the game.
Right.
So wouldn't it make sense to find some WNBA players
sure, right.
that are no longer playing
sure.
or kind of to that point? And I know I sound a little bit different than yesterday when we had this conversation, but after kind of reading everything, Ice Cube is doing it because he wants a hot name, but he's hiding behind it being to empower
right.
women and bring more eyeballs yeah. to women's sports. So I'm not – so
yeah.
The bottom line is it can be both. It
yeah,
can be both.
Exactly.
But there's one person that Ice Cube – again, he just didn't do it correctly. Mm-hmm. There's one person Ice Cube cares about, Caitlin Clark. That means that you do not care – about women's sports.
Right.
You care about Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark. Or else you would send an invite to Paige Buecher.
Exactly. And that is why he's getting ripped right now.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, I just kind of assumed that was an angle that everybody had kind of implied. But yeah, I mean, you know, for sure. It was always about the big three. It was always to make sure that the big three seemed as big as possible and get as many eyeballs and try. He sees, you know what I'm sure he saw first and foremost? He saw those Iowa games sold out, and he hears about how the Final Four women's ticket is a lot more than the men's ticket, and he's trying to get in on that because realistically, the big three, it's like the Harlem Globetrotters. It's just a rotating show that goes around the country, and it's like a circus almost, and he's just trying to get as many tickets as possible. So I don't blame him, but yeah, I mean, I guess if people are kind of catching on to the fact that he didn't actually care about improving Caitlin's brand, he was just looking to improve the big three brand, then yeah, I mean, obviously. I thought that was the most obvious part of it.
Well, not just Caitlin's brand. It's don't say that you're doing this to help. Because
sure.
this whole he tweeted yesterday, and it was, instead of having to go overseas, blah, 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 well, you're only helping one person.
Yeah, right.
You're not helping a bunch
of... Yeah, you're not helping women's... As a matter of fact, again, like, it's so obvious to me that you're actively hurting it by taking its
right.
best product away from the women's game. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So a lot of people aren't happy with Ice Cube, and then his
yeah.
junior, Ice Cube Jr., had a lot to say as well. So I thought it was fascinating, but you just be honest, you know, just be honest. You don't have to pretend and say, well, I'm doing this because I think it, no. Just say she's a hot ticket
yep.
and I'm changing the rules. And if somebody comes along, that is that big. And by the way, everybody's favorite, what do they call him? El Prez or whatever his name is from Barstool. He goes on to offer $10 million to Caitlin Clark to play in his intramural team. So now it just becomes a bit of a joke. And now I think Ice Cube might be mad at him, Portnoy, for doing that. So, yeah, I think that Caitlin Clark is going to have a lot of decisions to make, but people were not thrilled with Ice Cube. We do have sound from Sasha Vezenkov and him just kind of talking about his update and where he's at with that ankle.
Better, you know, getting to the right direction. I'm trying every day hard. Fortunately, the second injury, the same leg, like 15 days. So I'm trying. First time in my career, I'm out so long. So, you know, it's stressful. I want to help the team, but, you know, I'm trying to be 100% so to be ready to help the team.
There you have it. I mean, as simple as that. I mean, that is an interesting angle as well. I didn't really think about that, but, you know, we forget Sasha's been a pro for I don't even know how many years now. Like, I mean, this is probably really weird territory for him. He's never played in a season this long. 82 games is much longer than any other basketball season out there. But yeah, it's going to be a weird, he was already getting adjusted just to life out here and then to the style of play out here. It is a pretty big ask now after hearing him say it like that. It just kind of clicked on me that, you know, yeah, this guy probably is still learning a lot about how like NBA basketball is played. And it just doesn't really make sense to throw him in right here, right now, when let's not even forget the last time he played, we've talked about how the physicality post All-Star break has been completely different, how the game itself is played at a completely different style because of the physicality. Sasha really hasn't even played this style of basketball before. So it's just, again, it just adds to the major list of things that he would have to overcome if he is going to check back in and even get a couple games under his belt. It just feels like a really big ask to have him adjust to all that's going on and then a huge uptick in physicality where he didn't get to kind of ease his way into it. He's just being thrown in the fire as everybody is peaking at this time right now. It just kind of feels like you're throwing him to the wolves a bit.
Yeah, and probably the biggest miss this offseason, and there's a long list, right? I mean, there's, I guess, Trey Lyles could be in that category as a miss. I don't know if that's fair or not to say that he's a miss because there's been injury and things like that. Then he got cold. Chris Duarte, kind of a miss as well. But I guess the biggest thing is Sasha has to be the biggest miss because he was the possibility of the biggest hit. Right? I mean, if your expectations were pretty low, I mean, Duarte had pretty low expectations. Yeah. So it's hard to call it a miss. It would either be Trey Lyles or Sasha for biggest miss this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sasha. He had a lot of expectation coming into this year. He was supposed to be a real, like, solidified member of the rotation. But at the same time, like, it is a miss, but it's a really low risk miss. Like, you can take, you know, it's not a training everything you have, your entire war chest for Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. It's not paying Kyle Kuzma $25 million. If that's the biggest risk they took, you know, and it didn't pan out, at the very least, it was a $7 million per year risk. You're not hurting the future of your team. And, you know, I'm still not giving up on Sasha. I think there's a chance that next year he figures this thing out and he's actually a productive member of wherever he is. Even if it's not here, if it's somewhere else, I think Sasha's an NBA player. Mm-hmm. It just kind of was, you know, he didn't get the luxury of being on a bad team either. And maybe if this team played a little bit more consistently, there would be more moments to throw Sasha in. But with how just in flux it was from game to game, you just didn't really want to throw a new guy out there who had to learn everything. You kind of had to rely on the guys that got you here in the first place to steady the ship. And even then, you know, we've seen how rocky it's been all year. So it's kind of, in a weird way, been a tough year for Sasha to even try and integrate himself into this team. I could imagine how, if he would have joined the team last year, mm-hmm. I think it would have worked perfectly. It's just I think his timing was just a little bit off, and this wasn't the year to try and integrate a guy who really does a lot of similar things to guys you already have out there.
Coming up next, more sound from the Kings media availability. Also, we have an update from Eric Armstead, what that price of disrespect actually was. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Some more sound coming out of Sacramento and the Kings camp as practice wraps up, and there's some media availability. Already heard from Sasha and what he had to say. Long story short, if you thought you were going to see him tomorrow night, I'm really glad something came out though, Chris, because after that weird thing broke last week where it was, I'd imagine he would play, right? And us kind of getting our hopes up. I'm glad we're finally hearing from the horse's mouth as far as, okay, we'll see you when we see you.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really confusing, and yeah, it is good just to hear from Sasha. He doesn't, and also, you know, just in general, it's good to hear his emotions on it too, because I think this has been a very emotionally trying season for Sasha all year long. Just again, like, I'm sure he was promised a certain level of playing time when he moved his entire life all the way across the country. I think even if he wasn't expressly told, I mean, we had Monty McNair out there. We had Mike Brown out there. We had Vivek out there, like all the way overseas to go watch this guy play and try and tell him to come over. that's showing a certain level of interest. And again, I'm sure those conversations, a lot of them were, hey, come play with us. I know you have this MVP, you know, you can be an MVP over here, but how we're going to utilize you, you're going to be a big piece of this. And I promise, not only financially, but we're going to make this worth you uprooting your life. And, you know, for him to struggle to even get into the rotation and then to have these injuries at the end of the year that kind of eliminated any shot he had at potentially even getting some time. I just think it's good to hear that he didn't sound incredibly sad or sounded like he was frustrated at all. Just sounded like he understood that this is a process and, you know, doesn't seem to be in any rush to come back. He doesn't seem to be fearful of his NBA life or anything like that. Seems really comfortable with the situation. So maybe it's been discussed with him. Hey, we understand everything you've been through. Just make sure you're right. We'll steady this ship next season. Just make sure you're healthy this year and we'll see what happens. But really, I wonder how much of the conversation with Sasha has been direct in saying, look, maybe this thing might just need to focus on getting ready for next season.
Well, here's a comparison. I don't think anybody on these airwaves or Chris Watkins or Nate Littlefield thought that they would hear today. But this is where I'm going to take this. Because I'm thinking now, Chris, as you're saying what you're saying and how if you're Sasha, does it truly felt like you got a fair shake? Right? Does it feel like you got an opportunity where right off the bat, you just weren't in the rotation? Mm-hmm. So where did it go wrong? And the comparison that I'm going to use is everybody's favorite Dallas Cowboys quarterback,
yep.
Trey Lance.
Yep.
Because the conversation with Trey Lance was, okay, he's ready to go, and then it was time for him to go, and then he's running all the time. Then once they moved him, it was, honestly, he wasn't ready. Kevin Hart, he wasn't ready. That's that's what it was.
Yeah.
With Sasha, similar situation. It's almost as if they got him out there during practice. They figured, because my question is, if it was a matter of him not being ready, he would have started higher in the rotation than fallen out. Versus having to play in based on them going to get him.
Well,
you see what I'm saying? It's almost at some point during camp or something, they realize, all right, this guy isn't where we thought he was.
I also think a big part of that, too, is we don't know if Mike Brown wanted this dude. Like, he fell into his lap. Like,
he was told, we're getting him.
Yeah, like, you don't have a choice. Like, it's kind of what you have to deal with. And I think that might be I think that is a pretty good comparison just outside of the Trey Lance one, besides that Kyle Shanahan was getting his guy. Mm-hmm. And we know how important that is for Kyle Shanahan. With Sasha, he's just, Mike Brown's like, okay, I'm not going to play him if I have to. It's also not a quarterback where a quarterback right. is like, you draft that first round guy. There's no way you're not playing round guy. Cause there was that Niners story this last year. Which believe it if you want, but I don't know how true it is, where Kyle Shanahan came to Jed York and was like, hey, our best quarterback right now is the last pick of the draft. And
right.
I don't know if that's good or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I just feel like it's not necessarily like something went wrong. I would lean more so on this is Mike Brown's decision. Like, I mean, it's funny enough, we were talking earlier about what is Mike Brown's role in all this.
What is it that you do here?
But I would say that Mike Brown just, I mean, and me and Whitey talked about it a lot during summer, and I do have to give Whitey credit. He was on this really from even the recruiting time with Sasha. Mike Brown would probably tell you, you know, we have Trey Lyles. And Trey Lyles is a guy who's been in the NBA before. He's done this for our team last season. They just fit in the same box as each other. And I just think Mike Brown, especially like I said earlier, with how up and down the season went, I just think he was always going to go with the guys who got him there. And they weren't ever really afforded the luxury of getting experimental. We didn't see, you know, we didn't really see Keon Ellis enter the rotation fully until now. We didn't see Kessler Edwards get much time he still hasn't really gotten much time. They didn't really ever have time for experimentation. And I think that played a big role in it, as well as Mike Brown just really not favoring Sasha. I think he was afraid of what it would look like on the defensive end of things. And, you know, I would say he probably didn't get the most fair look. But at the same time, I don't think that Sasha was ever the big difference in this season. Like, I think a lot of people have built up this really big mythological, like, hero that is Sasha Vezenkov that would come off the bench and not have to dribble and just hit all these threes. And the reality was, yeah, he was a good shooter, but, you know, you even look at his numbers and they're not crazy. I mean, he shot 38% from three, which is great, but it's not 44%. And I think a lot of that was him getting adjusted. But for the most part, I don't think it's necessarily Sasha played himself out of the lineup. I just think Mike Brown, he was never going to be favored over Trey Lyles. And again, to Whitey's point earlier, I just don't know if you were to ask Mike Brown at the start of the offseason, hey, who are some guys typecast that you would want to bring in? I just don't think Mike Brown would have said, hey, get me a 6'8", 6'9", shooter who has questions on the defensive end. I feel like he probably would have said, get me as many JTAs as possible. Mm-hmm. And so, I just kind of think Mike Brown was never going to lean towards Sasha being the guy unless the Kings were in good or really, really bad situations.
Let's hear from Harrison Barnes, who also was a part of media availability. You talk about a leader and someone who always just says the right things. Here's Harrison breaking down.
He don't care.
How
the team don't care.
He doesn't care. No, none of them care.
They don't care.
But here's Harrison talking about what happened in the game and how they're feeling now after watching the film.
You look at the tape. We've had some losses here. We didn't have the mental approach or turnover, things like that. I thought last game we just did a lot of things just in terms of a lack of ball movement, a lack of terms of shots and things that we wanted that kind of allowed them to feel their breaks, feel their offense, not get the shots that we wanted. So just a few technical things to clean up. Nothing too crazy.
Nothing too crazy. Hmm. That's who they've been.
Yeah.
That is who they've been.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I mean, they've got to clean it up for sure. I mean, you can't go into Friday and you know, even have any sort of anything you did on Tuesday, you really got to throw out. That's mm-hmm. how I feel. I mean, I just think you got to really reapproach that game. And I know it was on the second night of a back-to-back that they played Dallas. And, you know, I know Dallas was too. You don't have a full time to kind of break down the matchup and really attack it. But we've been saying it for a while now. You have to treat this like a legitimate playoff series. Mm-hmm. And these days off here better have been a readjustment period. You better show up on Friday with a completely different game plan, because whatever you did on Tuesday didn't work even a little bit.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. That's
a good fear.
The same thing that we've kind of discussed with the Lakers not being able to beat the Kings or the Kings not being able to beat the Pelicans. How much can you change?
Yeah.
And I truly don't think that we'll see. I'll put it to you like this. Defensively, I don't think we'll see anything different. I am interested to see what they do offensively, mm-hmm. because this is an opportunity to look into the future, into the playoffs, to say, hey, man, like we talked about, 7-game series, those split actions, you're going to have to put some wrinkles in. You cannot just run. That thing is going to be looking more stale than some bread that you left out for 4 weeks if you don't add some wrinkles into that offense. Yep. And I think it's also a good I think it's also a good barometer, not just for this season, but moving forward. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've gotten to a point where, you know, we used to talk about the Warriors and what happened even when Steph was winning championships, right? Or they won in 2015. They ended up getting KD. But there was a point when you saw that offense, when things were tight in the finals, and when it's time to, hey, you know, just go get a bucket, Steph wasn't there yet.
Yep.
And that offense did not look the way it looked throughout the course of the season.
Right.
You had to add different things or a different player. Mm. And that's where we're headed. Obviously, you can't do all of that before tomorrow night, but this is the start of adding in some wrinkles that hopefully the team will be able to use and utilize on the offensive end. When we return, more Kings talk, also NFL overs and unders. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
The San Francisco Giants have taken the lead off of Nick Ahmed. I think they probably give it a double.
Yeah, it looked scoring, like a good double
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, scoring Michael Conforto.
Who also doubled.
They lead the Padres 1-0 in the top of the third. Jung-Hoo Lee up to bat looking to get his first hit of his Major League Baseball career. Dodgers also leading 2-0. They're beating the Cardinals. The A's play at 7:07 tonight against the Cleveland Guardians.
That should be interesting, right?
Well, they're at home too, so that will be very interesting. Frankie Cardicelli is out there.
He's on the scene right now. He's there right now. He is there literally right now.
I was talking to Frank about it last week, and apparently got another reverse boycott inbound. I'm curious, kind of just to see, maybe not the aftermath, but just what is going on, just how crazy it is there.
They tried to stifle it as much as they could, right? I mean, they shut down the parking up until 2 hours before first pitch, which is not normal. I think it's normally 3 or 4 hours beforehand, so... Sounds like the A's are already preparing for it in the worst way possible and trying to shut it down the best they can. But, you know, that's why you should follow our guy Frankie Cardicelli over there to see everything that's going to go down. I think Frankie said he's going to hang out in the parking lot for a bit. He's going to go talk to some A's fans
about
how they're feeling. But, yeah, he's already got boots on the ground there. So I think he's setting up shop. And, yeah, definitely go check out our guy Frankie Cardicelli over on Twitter to get any updates for what happens today at the Coliseum.
And the story, too, should be up tonight as well.
Right.
And if you see Frank, get a picture with him because the days are numbered till he becomes famous.
I think he already is.
Like big-time famous.
I mean, people are always coming up to him.
He's all over the King's socials.
Yeah, people are always coming up to him. And that's just, you know.
It's crazy. It's good. 2K did.
Yeah, 2K, yeah.
It's good for him. And, you know, he works his butt off. As do all the Sacktown Sports Kings insiders and all the content creators. So be sure to follow everybody. All right, guys. The game before the game ends, I have to give my official prediction.
Okay.
For the San Francisco Giants, my official prediction is they are set at, from what I saw, 83.5 wins. I'm going to say the San Francisco Giants get, and I'm looking into the camera here. San Francisco Giants, 89 wins. 89 wins for the San Francisco Giants, and they will make the playoffs. I don't know what happens after that, but give me 89 wins, over-under set at 83.5. Give me 89 wins, and give me the Giants to make the playoffs, probably as a wild card, but, you know, things get wild in the wild card, and anything can happen. There you go.
Awesome.
What would you put? I mean, you know, you said it very confidently. What would you put your confidence meter at?
For getting over 83.5, high.
Yeah.
For getting, and I know it's only, what is that, 5.5 games?
Right.
For getting to 89,
that's pretty significant.
Not as high. But getting over 83.5, I feel pretty confident. But I'm pretty
high.
Feels
like a pretty low number. I mean, they made some pretty significant additions this offseason.
That's what I would say. So there you have it.
And I think I saw yesterday, sorry if I'm putting you in a situation where you don't know, but I think there was a Snell update yesterday that I saw, or at least like in terms of what the rollout plan is going to be for Blake
Snell.
Yeah,
they've been in Arizona. They were getting their work in Arizona, and they'll make their way back up. It's not just him. There are a couple pitchers down there as well. So he's making his way.
Because it's Logan Webb today, yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's our guy.
That's right.
Our guy, Logan Webb. Who
Kings fan. He's in the building. He's
in the building. I'm telling you right now, I know it's too long of a season. We got to get him on the show.
We have to get him
because we
show.
Follow each other on social media.
Another Sacramento guy, and speaking of Sacramento guys,
that's right.
Professional players, the Eric Armstead number has dropped, and I have it. This is according to Emil. He popped in. Speaking of Emil, too, he's wearing a Luka Doncic jersey today.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Does he have any connection to
Dallas? I don't know. And did you see the jersey I'm wearing today?
Yes.
Bagley.
He is Marvin wearing Bagley. A Marvin
yeah,
Bagley.
So I'm the antithesis of Emil today.
Yes. Wow.
But anyway, it's just kind of crazy. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
That is crazy.
Definitely a decision.
But it's very much an Emil thing to do.
Yeah. But I wanted the Eric Armstead, it was a 1-year deal he was offered. I'd like you guys to guess, because he said he was disrespected, right?
What
number do you guys think is disrespected?
Can I get some insight on what his Jacksonville contract
I got it right here. 3 years for $43.5 million.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's like 13-ish a year, 13, 14 a year, something like that. If that's what he accepted... let's say he feels disrespected with a 1 year. I don't want to go too low and ruin the spirit of it. I'll say 7.5 mil. I'll say that they offered him half the contract he ended up accepting.
It's pretty low.
I feel like 5 was where I wanted to go.
Wait. Okay.
So it's a 1 year deal.
You think he's getting about half of what was offered half of what he's getting now.
Yes.
Okay.
In a very Eric Armstead way, he said it about as respectfully as he could. He literally was like, no beef for Kyle, no beef for John, yeah. No beef for the York family. But at the same time, with that being said, I feel majorly disrespected.
I think they just gave him more years, honestly.
They said 1 year, right?
Yeah. No, excuse me.
He thinks that's why he took Jackson.
Yes. Gotcha.
Which is kind of the reason why anyone in the NFL takes a contract.
Right.
So I think they probably gave him a little bit more per year, but only 1 year. I'm actually going to say they offered him 18 mil. One year, 18 mil.
Whoa.
All right, Alan, you are way off. I'm sorry. You're way – Chris, I was shocked how low you went.
Yeah.
But you are almost right. They offered him initially 1 year, $6 million, which in my opinion is disrespectful.
That's low.
And
that's
then I
really
think they
low.
Got up to 8, and it was just no go. And I
– And Jacksonville wanted to give him 3 years, $15 million a year.
13, I think.
13 and a half or something like 13, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're making 43.
And then probably guaranteed. I don't know how much he would have been guaranteed in that. I know how important that is in the NFL these days.
That's everything.
Always been, actually. But crazy. That is love. That does.
You said it started at 6 and possibly got as high as 8?
That's what Emil Fragoso has told me.
I feel like, in good faith, I would he was probably expecting less. Like, he was probably expecting, 8 and was hoping for 10. Like, that's probably what I would guess, but at the same time, that is pretty disrespectful. I mean, again, who's been there for 9 years,
had some good moments,
and they always say that the Walter Payton Man of the Year is the most important award in sports, and Eric Armstead has been the perfect citizen in terms of that locker room. I could definitely see how he would say, I would like to feel wanted here, especially with all the stars. It's really easy to overlook him. I could see how he would find that a bit disrespectful, but at the same time, that's the game, man. You're the place you want to get your money isn't offering you. Go out and find it, and he did. So definitely shout out to him. And at the same time, you really can't blame the Niners because they have to be stingy.
Yeah,
this is the situation they're in too.
I just thought maybe they weren't willing to give him. I just thought maybe they would give him a decent amount of money, but just weren't willing to give him the years.
Yeah, I mean they can't afford it, especially with Ayuk. I mentioned it earlier in the show. You look at the writing on the wall with every single person restructuring. I think that's about how much Eric was making in his contract anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how. I have a really, really difficult time understanding the salary cap. Yeah. I'm not smart enough to.
It's tough.
A lot of it's wizardry. A lot of it is conspiracy. A
lot of manipulation.
A lot of manipulation. Yes, we all know it's going up in the coming years more than we thought, or more than experts thought. So I just, with Eric, it's like, I mean, it's just time. But that offer, I think it goes both ways. I totally understand why he felt disrespected. But the Niners, you can't offer a guy with health issues who, quote-unquote, only shows up in the playoffs to stop the run, which was so important, isn't available all year. It's frustrating. It doesn't work. So
there you have it. The other thing I wanted to say that I didn't say as it pertains to the Giants is I have a pick that I feel better about, and he actually has worse odds. And maybe I'm picking with my heart here since we went to the same high school. Kyle Harrison for your...
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Dale Sal guy. Kyle Harrison for Rookie of the Year. That's what I got.
Wow.
Kyle Harrison for Rookie of the Year. I also like Jung-Hoo Lee for Rookie of the Year. But one of those two guys, that would be nice. Some Dodgers pitcher has the best odds.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. That farm system is just insane.
It doesn't make any sense.
It is just insane. So there you have it.
Dustin May just chilling. Yeah. Urias, right, just chilling in there.
All the time. And you...
Mookie Betts, solo homer.
Mookie Betts is doing his thing as usual. They're up 3-0 now, the Dodgers, over the Cardinals. Maybe we'll see a Brandon Crawford sighting if this thing this really pace,
yeah.
gets out of hand. And Chris, really just some of the final thoughts on the Kings listening now to some of the media availability. They're essentially, they're not, and somebody on the text line said, Sasha really hasn't done too much this season anyway. You're still not going to have, it's going to be the same team you rolled out on Tuesday. So what are you going to do to make sure that it doesn't end like it ended on Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, it's really crazy because I don't think like it was a focus issue. I don't necessarily think it's a, hey, like they didn't meet the moment properly. I think that they just weren't prepared like game plan wise. And, you know, yeah, definitely part of that goes on Mike Brown for sure. That's definitely something that I think needs to be addressed is just how they decided to attack Dallas. And again, it just felt like they weren't prepared for the team that Dallas is nowadays. But you do have to have a bit of pride, too. I mean, you do have to really fight to get these wins at this point in the season against teams that are fighting themselves, man. Dallas is not going to lay down. They're not going to say just because we won on Tuesday, oh, job's taken care of. They understand, if anything, they now see the blood in the water. And they say, oh, my gosh, we have a shot at tying this season series and getting up on these guys and putting us in a really good spot to win the sixth seed. So you got to stay focused. You got to stay locked in. You can't get too down on yourself. And, man, whatever you do, do whatever you didn't do on Tuesday.
Yeah. And, you know, you heard from Harrison Barnes himself just say he felt like there weren't huge issues, and partly because we've all seen this story before, yes, including the Kings. So who would be better than the Kings to right their wrongs and do that tomorrow night? We are continuing to break everything down tomorrow as we get you ready for the big showdown, essentially the Kings' last shot at the sixth seed. Not technically, but may as well be if they don't get it done tomorrow night. We will talk to you then. Thank you for listening to Styles and Watkins. Thank you to Nate Littlefield for doing his thing. Thank you to Kevin Gray Jr. from Dallas Mavericks pre- and post-game on 97.1 The Freak, home of the Mavericks, for hopping on the show. Until tomorrow, you got the Drive Guys coming up next with our guy Kyle Draper and Jay Johnson. Secure the bag, light the beam.